Welcome to the Global Venturing Review podcast. My name's James Mawson. With me, we've got Thierry Hellis.
Hello, Jim. It's good to have you back on the podcast. Well, I guess the last week it was you, but yeah, nice to be back together.
I know, it feels like it's been several months now since we've been doing it, but obviously I've been enjoying the sort of podcast that you've been doing, Thierry, and sounds like things have been pretty busy this past week too. But before we delve down into the deals and funds and all the exciting news across our three publications, Global Corporate Venturing, Global Government Venturing and Global University Venturing, just a quick sort of update. We've been preparing for our next symposium in London at the Grange by St. Paul's, which will be the 23rd and 24th of May. And just been sort of getting the feedback from all the really exciting speakers and sort of attendees, whether they're SoftBank with its new 100 billion fund or some of the universities at MIT, Stanford, University of California, Tsinghua, Imperial, Cambridge, Oxford. And it just seems to be a really exciting group coming together, and the whole venture ecosystem seems to be pulling together, even as some of the VCs are finding it a bit more challenging. I think the overall feeling is that entrepreneurs have never had so much opportunity to do investment, to develop their ideas and their dreams, and equally a wider pool of investors looking to support them in their dreams and hopefully help them come to reality as well. Feels like a nice moment, and the sun's shining as well, which is, who doesn't like that as well? But Jerry, what's been the exciting part on the news front? What's been the deals?
Well, as you said, it's been quite a busy week again. On deals, we've had the Flipkart Snap deal funding / merger saga. That feels like it's been going on forever by this point. But news continues to flow out of the respective camps. And the latest is that Flipkart could well close between $1.2 billion and $1.5 billion in funding from eBay, Tencent and Microsoft sometime this week or next. And meanwhile, SoftBank is still looking to organise an acquisition of portfolio company Snapdeal by Flipkart. And if that goes through, it could potentially invest up to $1.5 billion in the merged group, but it still has to convince two of the other five Snapdeal board members. So if that goes through, quite some nice sums going Flipkart's way there.
Yeah, no, it's a really interesting area. Obviously, the e-commerce sector in India, you know, has been on a tear the past few years in terms of Flipkart, Snapchat and various others, but obviously it all coming up against the headwind, which is Amazon really targeting that market. And I think there's been a bit of doom and gloom. The sort of the overall numbers of rounds in India have been down, whether venture or corporate venturing. And I think people are waiting to see. But certainly talking to some of the folks in India this past week, and actually, you know, there's quite a lot of hope that corporations outside of e-commerce, you're really feeling the opportunity is now to back some deals in the sort of IT, software, hardware space, given the whole strength of the Indian outsourcing community. And it really feels like the valuations have been trimmed. There's some great entrepreneurs out there, and the corporates in particular outside of e-commerce are looking to do it. And let alone in e-commerce, there's still a lot of potential to really create a behemoth who can take on Amazon and really deliver on the potential that is the Indian market. So really exciting deal, really interesting seeing the news that's been coming this past week. What else, Thierry?
Well, we've also have the ongoing saga that it's the ride sharing space, where on-demand ride platform Lyft has added almost 100 cities in the US to its network this year, and now it's raised another $500 million of equity funding. Although it hasn't named the investors in this round, but it has received funding from GM, Alibaba, Rakuten and Didi Chuxing in the past. And it has a $7.5 billion post-investment valuation now. And I think it's increased its funding to more than $2 billion since it was founded in 2012. So not quite, you know, the greats of an Uber, but or even Didi Chuxing. But yeah, quite impressive still.
Yeah, no, I think like if e-commerce has been hot in terms of valuations and amounts going in, and probably ride sharing and ride hailing have matched them, whether cars or bicycles. What's been interesting is, you know, the sort of the consolidation, you know, but actually looking across at the investors, how many of them are played in slightly different companies and then looking to pull some of them together. So I don't think that the end game's quite in sight on that, but the fact that Lyft has been able to raise such a large amount of sort of money at a higher valuation at a time when obviously Uber has been going through a little bit of headwinds in terms of people's impression of it. I think sort of talks that we might be at quite an interesting point in the next 2 years or so as how that endgame shapes out.
Definitely. And I guess the whole Waymo incident that Uber has to deal with might still knock their valuation down as well. So it's pretty much all still left to play for, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting on that one, you know, what happens with that court case. I mean, it's, you know, the sort of, it's obviously a very exciting acquisition when they acquired Waymo and, you know, really felt that sort of Uber was delivering on its, you know, massive sums of raised and high valuation to pick up some really interesting assets. But, you know, it'd be interesting to see what the IP and the sort of the insights the M&A team had shared on that. And obviously there might be nothing in the sort of claim and allegations.
Yeah.
You know, but it's certainly an interesting one to see what impact that will have. And if it's nothing less than a distraction, that still could be serious enough given its growth trajectory.
That's very true. Yes.
Cool. Anything else on the sort of deal front? We've covered off e-commerce. We're coming off rideshare in a minute or two. There's got to be some other exciting sectors.
I'm not quite sure. Probably e-commerce still. Automotive trading software provider. I'm not even sure how to pronounce this. Souch?
I would go with Souch.com.
Souch.com has raised $180 million in a Series D round that included Credit Ease's new financial industrial fund. That funding represents one of several nine-figure rounds closed by companies in China's online used car sector over the past few months, one of which was Souch's own Series C, in which Ant Financial and UCar helped invest $100 million back in November.
Yeah, car companies might be worried in the West about sort of Tesla and autonomous vehicles and, you know, electric vehicles and, you know, and still the sort of, you know, used car space can be a profitable one if you can get it right, it looks like. So we'll wait and see how this one works out. But the fact that they're automotive trading software, you know, just shows just how far and how quickly all the sectors have been disrupted by, you know, what used to be effectively things just held on Wall Street in the city. Yeah, but have we seen anything actually start to disrupt the city, though, and Wall Street, Thierry?
Well, we might do. We have Alphabet-backed brokerage app developer Robinhood, catchy name, which has pulled in new funding in a DST Global-led round that reportedly values it at $1.3 billion. The amount that Robinhood has raised has not been revealed, but the round follows a Fortune report toward the end of last year that suggested it was seeking $100 million at a $600 to $700 million valuation. So that indicates the company's value has risen along with the increase in tech IPOs so far in 2017.
Cool. Well, it's an interesting, like say, catchy name. You know, rob from the rich, give to the poor. Not quite sure whether that means that they're not going to get wealthy themselves, but I think they'll probably do quite well as an intermediary in the middle.
I'm sure they will. Then we have, I mean, I'm sorry to drag it back to e-commerce, but we have India-based e-grocer Big Basket, which has reportedly entered talks with Tencent, Fosun, and Amazon for a round that would be sized between $110 and $150 million and value it at $1 billion, more than twice the value of its last funding round, a $150 million Series D round that closed a year ago. And all three of the prospective investors have initiated big investment plans in India over the past 2 years, and a connection to a grocery provider could theoretically help them get some more leverage with mainstream consumers.
Yeah, it's interesting that Amazon hired a sort of corp development investment person for India. Relatively recent, Microsoft have talked about doing the same. And so you know, the fact that they might be, you know, snapping up Big Basket when the sort of Flipkart Snap deal merger may be going on, and while they're still investing heavily themselves, is a really interesting sign on that side of things.
Definitely. And then we have the existing investors GV and Sequoia Capital, which have co-led a Series C round that provided more than $90 million for a secondary storage technology developer called Cohesity, which valued that company at more than $500 million. Cisco Investments, Qualcomm Ventures, and Hewlett-Packard Enterprise also participated in the round, which will support sales and marketing, global growth, and research and development efforts. So IT is still a thing, I suppose.
IT rather than IT affecting everything else. Yeah, so it's
true.
It becomes a blurry category, but certainly you can create enough data and you need to store it somewhere, don't you?
Yeah. Well, if you have to store it somewhere, you have to analyze it. And we have Capital G, another Alphabet investment subsidiary, which has led an $81.5 million Series D round for Looker, a data analytics platform capable of curating large amounts of data to provide enterprise users with insight into their organization. And Looker has now raised $177.5 million, with investors also including Sapphire Ventures, the VC firm that was obviously spun out of software producer SAP.
Fascinating. Yeah, I think that sort of whole big data, AI, machine learning space is just exploding at the moment, actually. It's probably that and regenerative medicine are probably the two most exciting areas in investment, actually, at the moment, I think.
Yeah. From a consumer point, probably more the regenerative medicine than anything else. But yeah, for investors, certainly an interesting field in both.
Yeah, well, certainly in the consumers could be whacked by the AI machine learning if some of these calls get wrong, actually. I think they'll end up playing computer games and not worrying about and living off drugs.
The slightly more dystopian vision there.
Well, some of the games are very addictive to you.
I haven't tried them yet. I've tried on some headsets, but I haven't actually played anything yet, so I feel like it's a bit of a time suck if I get started on one of them.
You've got the weekend coming up. You've got the weekend.
That's very true.
Anyway, let's carry on this.
Yes. We also have China-based WeCash, which has raised $80 million in a Series C round co-led by SIG. That will enable it to add an online lending facility to its credit scoring platform, which already has some 80 million users. SIG had previously led the company's $20 million Series B round in 2015, the year after IDG Capital provided more than 6 million in Series A funding for the startup.
Fascinating. It's just an amazing space to be in, anything connected to sort of credit scoring, online lending. You know, it's just a great space, and in China it's obviously just exploding as the middle class comes on stream.
Definitely. Well, in China and the US, I guess, with student loans particularly, there's a lot of interesting refinancing startups launching in that space as well. So yes, when we have some news from Orcam Technologies, the co-founders are obviously fresh off the high. That was Intel's $15 billion offer to acquire their autonomous driving technology developer Mobileye. And now Orcam is also setting its sights on an IPO later in 2018. But in the meantime, they have raised $41 million at a $600 million valuation, a round that actually happened in February, but they didn't reveal that until now. And we don't know whether Intel Capital, which backed a funding round in 2014, returned for the latest transaction, but they certainly stand to get a nice exit if and when the company does float.
Yeah, I mean, the power of the Intel network is, you know, just the sheer length of time and the number of investments and it's made and access to that entrepreneurial ecosystem. Support one good startup and, you know, connect up and buy it, and then suddenly you can back others. And it's just a hugely powerful sort of model of the network effect within venture when they pull it together. And obviously, given Mobileye was the largest IT exit, I think, in Israel, being able to sort of back then the new startup as well seems a fairly smart, obvious thing to do.
Yeah, definitely. And then we have Northwestern Mutual's corporate venturing arm, which has participated in a $25 million Series C round, getting to the smaller ones now, I guess, for healthcare booking and billing platform Amino, that took the company's total equity financing to close to $45 million. And Amino will put the funding toward product development as it looks to broaden the range of care areas in which it operates.
Even with all the uncertainty around Obamacare and, you know, whether Trump will replace it or what might replace it or if anything will replace it, you know, that these types of healthcare booking and billing platforms can raise so much. It's such a good, I think, great, because, you know, it's definitely one of the more cumbersome areas within the US society is trying to work out what's happening on the healthcare side of things.
Yeah, I don't know how they do it.
Outside of the corporate venture side, on the university and government side,
The university site, we have the US-based marketing technology developer ActionIQ, which has raised $13 million in a Series A round that included Stanford University through its Stanford Engineering Venture Fund. And the round was led by Sequoia, with First Mark Capital, Amplify Partners and Bowery Capital also contributing.
Fascinating. I mean, what is it? Sort of Facebook and Google are sort of 85% of ad tech in terms of advertising mobile revenues, and, you know, the sort of numbers of ad marketing companies have been backed over the past year or so dwindled to almost nothing. I think so the fact that Action IQ has obviously got an edge and an angle and such sort of stellar syndicate in Stanford, Sequoia, First Mark and the others is slightly mind-blowing. There's obviously something in there that's well worth paying attention to, I think.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like it is. And then we have on the government side, Global Government Venturing, we have Singapore Technologies Telemedia, which is a wholly owned investment subsidiary of Temasek, the Singapore state-owned investment firm, which has invested $89 million in US-based cybersecurity company Armor. Armor was previously majority owned by investment firm Stevens, but STT has now been described as a co-lead stakeholder, whatever the that however many percent that is.
Could be anything up to
50%, yeah.
I reckon.
Yeah.
No, fascinating. I think, you know, sort of Temasek and the way the Singapore government has thought about encouraging innovation in their, you know, effectively their portfolio companies, you know, is a real sort of lesson, I think, to what can be achieved and how to sort of get companies to think more positively. It's interesting, this past week, the UK has been sort of slightly hand-wringing itself about its level of productivity and how few of its companies are actually sort of best in class. There's a great blog post actually by Bill Janeway from Warburg Pincus about sort of, you know, the best so far ahead and then the rest in terms of productivity improvements using technology. And I think Singapore government is spot on in translate how do we understand some of these big issues and how do we help our companies improve and defend themselves against cybersecurity risks. So it's a cats off to them. I think many countries can learn from their approach, but unfortunately, sadly, few seem to have the resilience and long-term approach to do it.
Yeah, that is probably the problem. It's, you know, Temasek didn't pop up out of nowhere. They've been building this for many, many years, and yeah, to catch up is going to take a while.
Yeah, definitely. It's not beyond the wit of man and woman, but you know, it's you know, it definitely seems like a few actually have the sort of interest in doing this, I suppose, if I term it that way. But anyway, yeah. Hope springs eternal. Anything on the fund side? Talking about hope, there's always plenty of hope when you've got a new fund on the beat.
There are quite a few funds. We have, start with a smaller one. We have clean vehicle technology producer BorgWarner, which has provided $10 million to US-based venture capital firm Autotech Ventures as part of an overall strategic investment plan. Autotech supplies VC funding to startups developing software, services, or electronics technology for use in connected, autonomous, and energy-efficient vehicles and mobility services. BorgWarner decided to put the capital in order to access innovative autonomy and electrification technologies, and it also plans to independently invest in a handful, however many that is, of startups, in addition to being a supplier, buyer, and partner.
Might be up to five then, it seems. Depending on quite what's happened to its hands. Might have lost a few fingers, I suppose. But we shall find out. But no, it's good to see a new kid on the block and, you know, sort of clean vehicle technology producer. You know, it's not axiomatic that they will immediately approach venture, given some of the results that have been happening among their peers, and the fact that they're back in Autotech, which is a sort of newer firm. I think it's Alexei, who used to have a great sort of insights and track record in the sort of nano and this space. So definitely one to watch, actually. And yeah, good.
Apart from the new kid on the blog, we also have an old kid that's still around. Legend Capital, the VC firm formed by the China-based conglomerate Legend Holdings, has raised more than $400 million for its seventh fund. The $400 million represents the fund's hard cap, according to a report in Private Equity International, and it brings Legend Capital's total under management to $4.35 billion.
That's a good success story for Legend. Just shows what can be achieved with a sort of good corporate backing. you know, was sort of an interesting space and timing it right. I think them and IDG were, you know, really avoided some of the sort of hubris and febrility in the 90s, kept it going, and you know, the results have really proved themselves.
Yeah, yeah. On the university side, we have Southern New Hampshire University, which has partnered venture firm Rethink Education to create a $15 million seed fund that targets early stage ed tech companies. It's called the Rethink Education Seed Fund, and it aims to encourage entrepreneurs, researchers, and technologists to develop data-driven innovations that improve access and affordability in the education to workforce pipeline. The university itself has committed $10 million to the fund, while Rethink provided the other five, which they hope to give to more than 24 seed stage companies over the next 5 years.
Mm, interesting indeed. I mean, I think our colleague, former colleague, Greg Bates-Brown is preparing his Global University Venture Funds benchmarking report, which will be published at the May conference next month. And you know, it's interesting to see, since he's been finished that research, you know, how many of these universities are really setting up and developing that program. We'll have a sort of a great powerhouse sort of presentations and talk on this subject. And delighted Greg's able to come along and present his report.
Fingers crossed there won't be too many new funds between the publication and...
Almost certainly will be.
Yeah, yeah. You're always playing catch up, which is a good thing. More fun's always a good thing.
Yeah, I think so. As long as they're done well, obviously. Otherwise, it's
a nightmare
for the ecosystems. Anyway, on the government side, talking of sometimes misguided approaches.
On the government side, we have a few. We have South Korea's Ministry of Science, ICT and Future Planning, which is looking to set up a $102 million fund for startups and VC firms in the biotech sector. And that fund will be managed by the Small and Medium Business Administration and the Ministry of Trade, and will focus on both infrastructure and assistance with R&D projects.
Unfortunately, it might be a recipe for a challenge there, having two ministries and administrations sort of involved. Too many cooks potentially is the result, and you know, be interesting to see how the criteria apply for what funds get backed. Great idea, great initiative, but might be a challenging one, I think.
Well, definitely want to keep an eye on and see how long it lasts and how successful it is.
Yeah, as long as it gets some of the money out the door, then hopefully the VCs have a free hand to invest in the biotech sector, and there's certainly an interesting one in Korea too.
Another one we have is Enterprise Ireland, the export credit agency of the Irish government, which has said it's making another $47 million in additional funding available to seed and early stage companies. And the agency has opened a competitive call for fund managers to signal their interest in taking on some of the capital and establishing funds. The money is expected to leverage private sector investments, and it's particularly aimed at sectors such as software, food, fintech, ICT services, clean tech, and life sciences, the core areas that Enterprise Ireland is interested in.
Yeah, no, Enterprise Ireland had a great track record, and really, I think, you know, done a lot after the global financial crisis to help position Ireland as well as it has done. So hats off to them.
Yeah, yeah. And they're certainly trying to fight off the potentially damaging after effects of Brexit at the moment. So, yeah.
We'll be interested to see how that goes. Anything else? There's got to be something more exotic happening.
Yes, indeed. We have quite further afield, we have Iran's sovereign wealth fund, Iran Foreign Investment Company, which has said it will invest an undisclosed amount into the healthcare and technology sectors. It hasn't really given much more details than that. We know that so far the fund has invested in 22 companies, which range from mining and industrial to IT and ICT, all the way to financial services firms.
Yeah, take the shackles of economic sanctions off and look what happens. Suddenly all sprouts on that. Good. Carry on.
We also have the Government of Canada, which has outlined the next steps for its innovation and skills plan in its budget 2017, including an additional $150 million for the Strategic Innovation Fund over a 3-year period, which brings that scheme to $1.26 billion.
Good chunk of change. That's about $1 billion US, I think, from memory. But that's not bad. I'll be actually, funny enough, I'll be in Canada both next week and in 3 weeks' time for a great sort of program that the government pulling together on the Canada Corporate Innovation Conference next week, and then the CEOs of Canada's largest corporations are meeting up in a couple of weeks' time after that in order to have a discussion both about innovation and corporate venturing, and feel very honoured and happy to be going back. Partly I'm happy it's the time of year. I didn't really fancy Canada in midwinter, but also it's just a great place to visit. So looking forward to that one. Anything else in Canada? They've been busy bees.
They always are, pretty much. We also have the BC Tech Fund, which is managed by Kensington Capital Partners, has invested an undisclosed amount into Lumira Capital 4, which is a new healthcare and life sciences VC fund managed by Lumira Capital. The firm invests in pharmaceutical, medical device, health IT, and consumer health companies across North America, so not specifically just focused on Canada. Although where they're specifically going to use the money from BC Tech Fund might still be focused just on that country, but they didn't say, so.
Cool. Okay, I'm conscious I've been chattering away, so I think, to save everyone's ears on the podcast, why don't you finish off on the exits and regulatory and people moves and provide a nice summary on that side, but it's been really excellent on that side, thanks, Thierry, so carry on.
Great, well, let's dive into exits. We have Sucampo Pharmaceuticals, which has bought a rare disease therapy developer, Vitesse, for $200 million in cash and stock, allowing Fitzer Venture Investments and Lundbeck Fond Ventures to exit. The CVC units had contributed to the $42 million Series A round closed by Vitesse just 9 months ago, so really quick exit there. And then we have the data management software provider Cloudera, which has finally publicly filed for its IPO, setting an initial target of $200 million. The largest shareholder in the company is Intel, which owns a 22% stake after investing $342 million in 2014. But Alphabet is also in line for an exit. Cloudera is set to be looking at a valuation around the $4 billion mark for the flotation, but investors could yet be put off by the $187 million loss it booked in the year leading up to the end of January. Moving on, speculation about a Spotify IPO has been ongoing for years, but reports now suggest it might take an unusual route to the public markets, listing its stock but not actually issuing any new shares or raising money. The move would, however, give investors including Telia Sonera, Coca-Cola and various record companies an opportunity to sell their shares, though it may not be at the same $8.5 billion valuation that Spotify last raised cash at in 2015. Pharmaceutical firm Astellas Pharma, then on the global government side, has agreed to acquire Belgium-based drug discovery company Ogeda for $850 million, providing an exit to Société Régionale d'Investissement de Wallonie, the state-owned investment company for the Wallonia government in Belgium, which took part in a €16 million Series B round in 2015 and a $12.8 million Series A round in 2012. Now, let's look at a section that we don't always cover, but regulation. The UK government is set to announce tax break reforms to ensure that entrepreneurs benefit from the tax incentives rather than property investors. The patient capital review, which UK Chancellor Philip Hammond called for during his budget speech in March, is due to start in May 2017 and will cover the Enterprise Investment Scheme, a scheme that offers several types of tax relief to investors who purchase new shares in small, higher-risk companies in order to help them raise capital. And an amendment to Germany's law on competition restrictions, proposed by the Federal Ministry for Economic Affairs and Energy, has been approved by the Federal Council, known as Bundesrat. The amended law means the antitrust regulator, Bundeskartellamt, will in future have the power to investigate acquisitions worth $425 million or more. That decision is particularly aimed at startups, which can be acquired for large sums of money despite not having any or not very high revenues, a fact that until now meant those deals circumvented antitrust regulations. The Bundeskartellamt will be able to consider factors including the value of user data, networks, and future business scaling when deciding whether to grant acquisitions. And finally, people. GV, the subsidiary of internet and technology conglomerate Alphabet, has hired Craig Kornblau as its first media and entertainment advisor, Kornblau was president of film studio Universal Pictures between 1999 and 2014. He will work with the corporate venturing unit's entire portfolio, but will also advise on investments in the entertainment sector. And to round off today's podcast, the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development has appointed two new members, Agris Premanis as director for Kazakhstan and Aytin Rustamova as head of office in Tajikistan. And with that, you are again all caught up. James has already left me. He's had to rush off to another call. So it's left to me to wish you a productive week. Again, if you have any comments, feel free to email me at thelers@morsonia.com. That's thelers@morsonia.com. Or if you feel so inclined, do leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you get this podcast from, SoundCloud. Leave us some stars. It always helps us reach more listeners. Thank you very much. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Global Venturing Review podcast brought to you by Morsonia Limited. I won't speak to you next week because that is the Easter bank holiday, but I will be back with you in 2 weeks' time. Until then, goodbye.
Global Venturing Review was produced by In Ear Production. You can find out more by going to inearproduction.com.